Begin the current topic, Mesechtes Erech and Daf Chav Gimel. Begin on the top of the Yamut, but the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, the series of these Mishnayos, continuing the first Mishnah of our Perek, regarding a person's responsibility with his estate, his assets, and specifically our Mishnah discusses one of the topics of the previous Mishnah, that of, as it comes applicable to Hekdash. Says the Mishnah, Hamakdash Nechasim, someone sanctifies his properties. Now, this person already had an outstanding debt, that of his wife's dowry. So although now he said, everything I own goes to Hekdash, but he has to pay his wife's dowry, he says, Kishi Gershena, when he's going to, if and when he's going to divorce his wife, Yadur Hana, then he has to take a vow prohibiting himself to have benefit from his wife. And the purpose of that is that he should not go ahead and then remarry her, because maybe he's being crafty when he's divorcing her. His whole intention is, because since she's an outstanding debt, which is preempted that of Hekdash, she's going to collect her ksuba, and then he'll go remarry her, and therefore he'll be able to get back money from what he was already makdash. So to avoid that trick, he has to take a vow forbidding himself to have benefit from her when he's divorcing her. He says, no, in the tzarchinom, to do that, he doesn't take a vow for prohibiting himself to have benefit from his ex-wife. Now, kiyetze b'davar, similarly, amr b'shem gamliel, it says, af ha'arv le'isha b'ksubasa. So too, if there's a situation where when a husband wrote a ksuba to his wife, which is a debt that he owes to his wife in case of when she leaves the marriage, there was a guarantor that said, look, if your husband can't pay, I'm going to pay. Now the husband's divorcing her. If there's a guarantor, he has to make a vow prohibiting himself to have benefit from his wife. Because maybe he might be doing a trick, being crafty on the assets of his guarantor. So what happens is he has no money, so he'll divorce his wife. He can't pay, the guarantor will have to pay, his wife gets the money. He'll remarry her, and now the couple has money again. So to avoid that trick, he has to take a neder hanot, so he can't have benefit, he's not going to remarry her, and then, okay, fine, the guarantor will pay it, but not as a trick for the couple to get money off of this guarantor. Now the Gemara says, but my kemiflagi, regarding the first machlegis in our Mishnah, regarding hekdish, if one has to take a neder prohibiting himself to have benefit from his gerusha or not, ask the Gemara, what's the machlekes? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yezu, who said that you have to make a neder, he held. All the moisik kanunyal hektish. A person would make a trick on hektish. So Rabbi Yeshua held that ain't all the moisik kanunyal hektish. A person would not make a trick on hektish regarding the assets of Hashem, and therefore you don't have to go ahead and take a neder. Let's say you would, so you have to take a neder. And that asks the Gemara, but velahada amar Rav Huna. But then take the following Amarok teaching of Rav Huna. He says, Shchiv Mirash Hekdash Kal Nechasav, a dying person who says all his property goes to Hekdash. V'amar, and additionally he says, but I want you to know, Mana L'Ploy Nebiyadi. There is a mana, a certain amount of money, that for that person in my hand, meaning I owe this person a certain amount of money. Says Rav Huna, Neman, the dying person is believed that he actually, not everything's going to go to Hekdash, something is going to go to a debt. Because Chazakah, there's a presumption, Einay Sekunun Yal Hekdash. We don't think that he's making a trick, he's thinking, uh-oh, I give all my money to Hekdash, what I do? No, let me get out of it. Let me say I owe some of money. No, a person's not going to make a kanunya on Hekdash. Says the Gemara, according to our interpretation of our Mishnah, it seems like that, okay, Rav Huna is dependent on the Machalik's Tanoim, he's not going according to everyone. That, oh, you're saying he wouldn't make a kanunya? Oh, that's like Rabbi Yeshua. But we're saying Rabbi Lezer says that a person would make a kanunya on Hekdash. Says the Gemara, no. Rav Huna doesn't have to be not like all Tanoim. Because ad kan loy pligiyeh lebebari. Yes, the machlekes is as we had previously interpreted in the halacha of our Mishnah, but that was regarding a healthy person, a regular person. That's where Rabbi Elazar said that a person would make a trick on Hekdash, because whatever he's taking away from Hekdash with this trick is becoming his. He's remarrying his wife. He's going to get the benefit from that trick. But in the case of Rav Huna, by a dying person who he's going to be dying, everyone would agree, a person would not make a trick and be crafty on the monies of Hekdash. My time, what's the reason? Because a person wouldn't sin if it's not for his own benefit. To benefit someone else, he's not going to sin. This dying person is not going to try to steal money from Hekdash and give it to someone else. If it was for himself, like in the case of the Mishnah, that's what this machlek is, and therefore we could still keep the previous interpretation, and it wouldn't be difficult in Rav Huna. Ikadami, there are those that say that actually, bebari the kulam aloi pligi, that regarding a healthy person, that no, no one disagrees in the halach of our Mishnah, and the Gir says the adam oisek kenunya al hektish. A person would make a trick on hektish. It's not just Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Shua would also agree that a person would be crafty. He would try to get a way out and do a dishonest to get back money from hektish and then remarry his ex-wife. But v'hacha benedrish hud berabim kemafakir. Rather, the machlekes in our Mishnah is regarding a vow that was taken in public. What's the machlekes? Marsa Rabbi Shua held that yesh lehafar. Such a vow still has nullification, and since you could nullify that vow, so you don't have to take a neder, because it wouldn't help anything anyway. So who cares that you took a neder barabim, but you could get out of it, and since you can get out of it, so it doesn't help to take a neder. Whereas Amar Sava, but Rabbi Eliezer held that since the vow was taken in public, that he's not going to take her back, so ein la'afara, so there's no more, and you can't nullify such a vow. So such a vow is going to be effective because it cannot be undone. So therefore, we make him take a neder. According to Bishu, it's not going to help anyway because you could just undo the neder. If you do it on the neder, what's the purpose of making him take it? And therefore, according to Bishu, there's no necessity. According to Beleza, it would be effective, and therefore there's necessity because we would presume that he would be making this kenunya on hektish. Well, if you want similarly, you could say, the kule alma neder shur debarabim yesh lefa, that actually a public vow, although you're taking it public, it could still be nullified. But v'hacha b'neder shohuder al das rabim kemiflegi. The machlekes is regarding a vow that was taken with the consciousness of the public, meaning that the public tells him, you take the vow. Such a vow cannot be nullified, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, if it cannot be nullified, we make him take it, so he shouldn't do the kenunya. According to Rabbi Shua, anyways, he could nullify it, and therefore there's no purpose, and therefore we don't make him take the ned. Now, however, ask the Gemara, but even according to these two interpretations, you're saying that's the machlekes tanayim. But then the Gemara asked, like, similar question the Gemara asked by Rav Huna. But Velohoda Amar Meimer, but then this Amorek teaching that Amemer said, Neder Shehud Barabim Yesh Lehafar. A vow taken in public could be nullified. Adas Rabim Ein Lehafar. It was done with the intent by the public telling him he has to take that vow, cannot be nullified. Lehme Ketanoi Amar L'Shmaita. Shall we say then, according to either one of the interpretations, that that's contingent on Machligis Tanoim? It seems like he's not like everyone. But soon, moreover, the Gemara asked, according to the interpretations we were just saying, the Mishnah said, Rabbi Shua Omer Ein Nitzarach. It says, you don't have to take a vow. No. According to the way we're explaining it, it's not that you don't have to. He would mandate it. It's Ein Amoyel Miboyel. It's just that it's not effective. So there's no purpose because you can be made for it. But according to what we're saying, it's why we're saying in the Mishnah Ein Nitzarach. So the Rebbe says the Gemara had a different interpretation. Hacha over here in our Mishnah, B'she'ela dehektish kamiflegi. The machlik is regarding, could someone ask regarding his error in the fact that he made a hektish, that's the machlekes. Now, as Rabbi Eliezer held, that a person cannot go ahead and ask for a sage regarding this that he made hektish. Even if he tells the sage, I did not have this in mind when I made the neder, and it was a hektish betois, I made an error in the fact that it was maktish, even so, the sage cannot permit his neder. Oh, so therefore, this person is divorcing his wife. We could assume that really he's regretting the hektish that he made. But the sage cannot undo the hektish that he made. Therefore, he's going to do this trick of divorcing his wife to get back the money that it was maktish, because he has no other way of getting it back. But Rabbi Shua holds that you could be shoyl on hektish. So therefore, there's no necessity. In itzarch, you don't have to go ahead and make him take a neder of anah, because if you would think he's doing a kenunya, a trick to get back money from hektish, he would have just gone to the sage and been asking regarding his neder that he made a mistake, and he wouldn't have to divorce his wife. So therefore, it's Ein Hitzarach. And it's because, just regarding the actual halacha, could you be shoyel on hektish or not? As the Gemara says, Vatanya, as we similarly learned that there machleik is regarding this concept, could you be shoyel on hektish if you made a hektish betoyes? Can you undo that? As the Braisa says, Hamakdish Nechasa, the case of our Mishnah. Someone, he made his estate hektish, v'hayislav ksubasishon, he had an outstanding ksuba from his wife on his estate. Rabbi Eliezer, he says, "Kishu megarsha yada hana." As we said in the Mishnah, when he divorces her, is to take a vow, prohibiting himself to have benefit from her. Pshuim, he says, "In the tzarich, you don't have to." So far, that was like what we said in the Mishnah. But continues the Braisa of Amr Belazer Rebbe Shimon. He says, "Hein hein divri b'shamai, hein hein divri b'sil." Meaning, the machlekes Rebbe Elazar Yeshua is the same machlekes b'sham b'sil. Why? B'shamai say, "Hektish tois." If someone made something hektish in error, it's not what he intended. Hektish, in spite of that's going to be hektish, because there's no she'elah for hektish. You can't undo hektish. Now, the classic case of hektish betoyis is like, for example, he said, the black ox the white ox that's going to come out first in my house is going to be Hekdesh. Turns out the first one that comes out is black. So that was an error, but it's still the first one. Bishami says, that's Hekdesh. B'Shalim, Hekdesh, Toysay, and Hekdesh. B'Shalim say, no, a Hekdesh, an error is not a Hekdesh. You could be Shoyl and Hekdesh. And therefore, that's exactly Machleik, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Shua. Rabbi Lezer held that you cannot be Shoyl, and therefore, we have to assume that he's doing a Kanunya to get it back from Hekdesh. So you make him take the Nether. Because according to Rabbi Shua, there's no purpose to make a Nether, because if he wanted to, he could just be Shoyl, and therefore, we don't have to assume that he's doing a Kanunya. Now, the Mishnah said another area of the same idea, not just by Hekdesh. So he said you'll have the same situation when there's a guarantor in the ksuba, where again you have to think that maybe there's a kanunya being done that he's going to divorce her to get the money from the guarantor, and then he's going to take her back as a wife. So therefore he has to take a neder of ana for prohibiting himself from having benefit from his wife. Now, related to this halacha, the Gemara brings the following incident. Moshe bar Atri, which was his name, arva de kalsehava, he was the guarantor for his daughter-in-law, meaning his son took an obligation of a ksuba. But to back it up, his father says, in case his son can't pay, the father-in-law will pay. Now, Rav Huna, the son of this Moshe Ba'atzri, Tzuvim Rabban Hava, who is a Talmudic scholar, but Chikile Milsa, and money, financials were very difficult for him. He didn't have money. So Abaya said, Leke Denasvi Eitel Rav Huna, is there no one that's going to give counsel to Rav Huna that how to get money? The following idea. Delegarish Lebesu, let him divorce his wife, and he's not going to have money to pay the ksuba. V'tit v'ksuba samavua. Then his ex-wife will go ahead and collect the ksuba from his father. V'lahadri, mahadri. And then he'll go ahead and remarry her. Now the couple will have money. So on that I'm like, Rava said to Abaya, but v'anan yidr hanotanan. What do you mean? In our Mishnah we learned exactly this idea that we're concerned that she'll have to take a neder of ana, prohibiting herself from her husband. What's going to be the gain? It's not going to be able to remarry her anyway. Says the Gemara, but Vabai, he held, no. Atu called the Megarish, you think anyone that divorces his wife, everyone that divorces Bebedina Megarish, that he divorces in court? Meaning, you're right, if it's done in court, the court says, what? Before you divorce, you have to take a neder vana. So Vabai was basically saying, let him go discreetly and divorce her. So that's already done, the deed is done, and he didn't take a neder vana. Then his wife will be able to collect the ksuba, and then he'll remarry her. Now, but L'Saifik Lo'i Milsu Dukayin Hava, but at the end, actually, it was revealed that actually Rav Huna, it's a kain. And if he would have divorced his wife, he actually would not be able to remarry her anyway. On that Amabai, he says the famous quote, Basa Anya Azla Anu Yusa. After the poor goes poverty. I mean to say the poor get poorer, the rich get richer. I mean to say, it doesn't even help. Here he's poor and I had a good idea for him, and he's even going to get poor. He can't go ahead and even do this idea because he's a kain. But the Gemara asked, Umi Amabai Hachi, the Gemara asked on the original idea of Abaya. Did he really say this to do this trick to go ahead and get his father to have to pay for the ksuba and then remarry her? But Vam Abaya said regarding a similar type of situation that Ezehu Rasha Arm, who's a crafty, wicked person, Zeha Mesi Eitzah, this is someone who gives counsel to somebody, Limka Benachasim, to sell assets, Kerab Shemingam Leo. Meaning, as the Gemara in Ksuba Tavtahim at Beis, that if someone says when he's dying, he says to a person, he says, look, my properties go to you. After you're done with it, it goes to that person. And then the first person goes and he sells it all, so it's not going to go after him to the second person. And then he consumes it. Shimon Lewis says, yeah, only what was left over from the first person does the second one get it. But if the first one sells it off, then the second one won't get anything. Abaye says, if someone's telling someone to do that, that's a wicked person. He's crafty, he's wicked because it's going to work, but that's not really the intention of what the dying person had in mind. And you're doing this, and it's conniving. So the Gemara asks, here's the same idea. There's also Rasha Arm, because the father, obviously, was not supporting his son, didn't have that intention for his son to divorce his wife, to then take her back, and to exploit his father for the ksuba that way. So if we're going to give him the counsel, isn't that considered Rasha Arm? What was Abai suggesting? Says the Gemara, two differences. First of all, Bereshani, a person's son is different. That's not considered Rasha Arm. Yeah, the father maybe might be pressed and doesn't want to support a son, but that's not considered Rasha Arm if you're forcing a father to have to give money to a son. And additionally, with Tzuvim Rabban Shani, when it comes to a Talmud scholar, it's also different. Since his son, Rav Huna, was a Talmud Chacham, to get the father to have to pay it is also different. That would not be considered and qualified as a Rasha Arm. But the Gemara asked, but anyway, it shouldn't be efficient anyway, because the Arav, the Ksuba, Loi Mishtab, what was the whole idea that, oh, the father-in-law is going to have to pay it. But the halacha is that the guarantor of a ksuba actually does not become indebted. Although he's quote-unquote a guarantor, actually doesn't have to pay. So what would have been the whole thing that to get the father-in-law to pay because he's a guarantor, he wouldn't have had to pay anyway. So the Gemara explains as a continuum in Beis, kablan hava. The father-in-law here was not just a Arab. There's two types of guarantors. There's a classic Arab and there's an Arab Kablan, which is a higher level of Shibud. Where in this situation, what happened was that Rav Huna gave to his wife that he was marrying metatlan, movable items, as collateral for the ksuba. She went and she took it and gave it to his father, which then the father gave it back to his son. But that's a Kablan because since it was actually given by hand, that's taking a greater level of responsibility as a guarantor, and therefore he would have been obligated as a Orev Kablan, which someone means someone that received, he received something, that would have he would have actually been obligated, again, if not for the fact that his son was a Kayin, it wouldn't have worked anyway. But the Gemara continues asking, Hanich Lamandam, but this is, works well according to the one that says that regarding a Kablan, Avagav de Leslein Nechasim Lalaiva Mishtaber, that even if the borrower didn't have assets at the time of the loan, still the guarantor, since he's a Kablan, is obligated. He becomes indebted. So that would make sense here, where even though his son Rav Huna was a poor, didn't have money, but the father would become indebted. But El Manda Amab, according to the pin that says, Islay Mishtabid, only if the borrower has money, so then the lender is committing, the guarantor is committing himself, because he knows, okay, in case he defaults, but at least I'll be able to go ahead and collect from the borrower. But Leslay, but if the borrower doesn't have any assets at the time of the loan, that actually loy mishtabid, that actually the guarantor does not make himself indebted with his words of I'll be the guarantor, although he's saying it, but that's just to get the loan to happen, but he's actually not indebting himself, because since the guarantor doesn't have anything to collect from the borrower, he's not really conclusively indebting himself to the lender. So Michael Amema. So what are you going to say in this situation? Because the Gemara assumes that Rav Huna didn't have any assets at the time that his father became the Kablan, and therefore the father would not become indebted. So what was the Abaya's whole idea in the first place? So the Gemara says, Ibai Sim, if you want, you could say it's actually Rav Huna Havale Vishtadif. Rav Huna actually had assets at the time that he married his wife. And therefore his father would become Meshubit as a Kablan. Even according to the one that holds that you have to have Nechasim, Rav Huna's son had just Vishtadif, just they got ruined. So therefore, he didn't have at the time when they wanted to do this ruse, but the father was Meshubit. Although by same, if you want, you could say, like we mentioned this idea before, Abel Gabe Brei, a father in regards to his son, Shibude Meshabit Nafshe. He does make himself indebted, even though that opinion holds that generally the guarantor will only make himself indebted if he knows that the borrower has something that he'll be able to collect from. By his son, it's different. He'll be Meshabit himself, even if the son doesn't have anything, and therefore, it would have worked, had he not been a kain, to collect from the father-in-law, because he would have been Meshubit, even though his son didn't have anything. Now the Gemara goes back, Ditma, to explain what we said, that we said, oh, it depends according to which opinion about if a Kablan is Meshubit, even if the Leiva doesn't have anything, or if only if he does have, as we find the following Machlekes. Arev Diksuba, someone's a guarantor for a woman's dowry. So Divrei HaKol Lo Mishtabed, everyone agrees that actually, although he's, quote, the guarantor, he does not become indebted to pay up in case that the husband defaults. And the opposite, Kablan de Malchayv, which is a higher level of Shiva, the Kablan, and additionally, it's also regarding a real debt, a real loan, that someone had given money of a creditor, Divrei HaKol Lo Mishtabed, actually, everyone agrees that, yes, such a guarantor has definitely something that has more seriousness to it, on both points, in regards to his responsibility and in regards to the actual debt, because actually money was lent over here, that, yeah, the guarantor will be Meshubit. However, the middle cases, where only one element that has not the other one, Arev de Bal Chayv, although there's a real debt over here, but he's just the lower level of Arev. Or Bekablan de Ksuba, or although, as we're going to shortly explain, by Ksuba, the woman didn't lend anything to the husband, there was no money she invested, but the person, the guarantor, is a Kablan, a higher level of responsibility. That's where we have this Machlekes. Ikal Mandama, there is the one who says, Islay Nichsi Lalaivi Mishtabin. If the borrower has assets, so then the guarantor in either one of these two cases will make himself indebted because he knows he can go ahead and collect from the borrower who, if he defaults and he has to pay, he'll be able to get his money back as a guarantor. Leslay Lemishtabin. If he doesn't have, he's not being Mishtabin himself. He's quote unquote a guarantor, but he's not really guaranteeing. Whereas there are those who say, and this is what we referenced before, that Afakav the Leslie Mishtabin, no, even if the borrower doesn't have at the time of the loan, he is Mishabit himself, again, either one of these cases, either of Arvid Balchayim or Kablan the Ksuba. Now, says the Gemara b'Hilchos Abakula, but the halacha actually is in all cases. Avagav de lesle, even if the borrower does not have at the time of the loan, nami mishtabed, still the guarantor does make himself indebted, he is going to be responsible. Labar ma'arv de ksuba. The one exception is, if someone is a guarantor of a ksuba, where the avagav de isle, where here it's actually on both points, the weakest type of guarantee, because it's a ksuba, as we're going to explain right now, and he's only taking responsibility as an arv. So avagav de isle, even if the borrower, who in this case means the husband, has money at the time of the quote loan, meaning at the time that he's marrying the wife, still loy mishtabed, the guarantor actually is not going to be indebted. My time, what's the reason? For 2 points. Mitzvah ka'avet, first of all, this guarantor is doing a mitzvah because he's helping this couple get married because it wouldn't go through if he wasn't the guarantor. And v'loy midich asra is the girsa, without a yud. And actually, he's not making her lose anything because she didn't invest any money. She's just getting, by the fact that she's getting married. So for those 2 points, he's not really going ahead and taking a shibud. He's just saying, okay, look, I guarantee, but he's not going to actually have that responsibility as a guarantor in case the husband can't pay it. Now, the Gemara continues with an incident relating to the halacha of our Mishnah. Hahu gavra dezavninu lenechse. As a person who sold off all his properties. Now, but v'kagorsha ledebesu. Now he was divorcing his wife, which that was a pre-existing debt on his assets. So Shulchan Rav Yisa berated the Rav LeKamedir Papa, and he asked him as follows. He says, look, Arev Tanan, regarding a guarantor, we already learned in the Mishnah that we're concerned that maybe that he's going to be doing a kanunya, where really he has this no money, but the guarantor of his wife's ksuba, he'll divorce her, take her back, they'll get money from the Arab. So therefore he said in the Mishnah, you have to take a neder, prohibiting to have benefit from his wife. So to Hekdash Tanan, regarding Hekdash, we also learned the same idea that we're concerned for kanunya. But in the case of this situation, what's the halacha regarding consumers? Are we concerned for kanunya? Do we say that after his wife is going to go ahead and take the money from the people that he sold to, he's going to go ahead and remarry her, and therefore, he would, in this situation too, also have to make a neder of anah, prohibiting himself from having benefit from his wife, thus prohibiting him from ever remarrying his wife. So Amalei, so Papa sent him, Tana, the Tana of our Mishnah, Kiruchla Nechsha Benezel, what do you think he has to be like a merchant who is counting every last dollar that he has? In other words, he said these cases of Arab and of Hekdesh, but of course it would apply to Lekech too. It's the same idea. A guy who has no money, he's going to find a ruse, a way to get back monies that he'd already given over to other places by divorcing his wife and then remarrying her. So yeah, there also he says the same thing. He has to make a Nedavano. But actually, in Aradam, the Nadarins, they disagree. They say, no, the Tanan, the case that we learned in the Mishnah, we learned. The Loitanan, the case that we're not taught, were not included, and therefore, actually, by the case of Bekech, we would not have to take a Neder Vanah. Now, Amr Masharshi, he says, my time of the Nardar, what's the reason Nardarians, why is that any different? So he says, the Gemara says as follows, because Bishlem Hekdesh, we understand the case of Hekdesh, we said you have to take a Neder Vanah, Shem Revach the Hekdesh, because of the gain of Hekdesh, we have to be concerned, we have to protect the interest of Hekdesh, and it would make sense why this person would be doing this trick on Hekdesh to get back some monies, and therefore we say you got to take a net of another first. So to Arev Nami, regarding the guarantor of the Ksuba, we have to protect him too, because like we said, mitzvah of it. First of all, he was doing a mitzvah to get this couple married. V'lav midi chasra, and he wasn't actually making the girl lose anything. So therefore, yeah, you want to get him to have to pay up, you have to first take a net of another. But a lekeach, but regarding a consumer, mechti, let's see. Medi yada, the consumer knows, the cholchad v'chad ikale ksuba, every single married man has on him an outstanding debt of a ksuba, amay nezel v'nizvan. Why'd he go and buy this property? What do you mean? Who asked him to go and buy it? Ihuda avtzer nafshi. He caused the loss for himself. He knows that there's an outstanding ksuba, and therefore the person does not have to take a neder of Hanan's wife. Yeah, it makes sense. You know, I could divorce my wife and get back that money, and she'll get it and remarry, and therefore it's his loss, and we don't have to protect his interest in contrast to Hekdesh in regards to Arba Ksuba, and therefore that's why they said that you don't have to take a neder of Hanan in the case of Lekech. Now the Gemara continues with the halacha of the next Mishnah, which opens up in the same type of a case as we mentioned the previous Mishnah of Hamakdish Nechasim. Someone makes his estate Hekdesh, but he had a pre-existing debt of the woman's ksuba, whereas Rashi says it wouldn't even apply to the whole discussion we had in the previous Mishnah. For example, in the case of where if the Gerishin, he divorced her before he even was Makdashit. So there's no element of Kenuni over here because obviously this was already not included in Hekdesh at all. But the thing is, but it was never collected yet, and now it's already Hekdesh. Ubal Chayv, or if let's say he has an outstanding creditor. So says the Mishnah, although of course they could collect from Hekdash because it was never Hukdash in the first place. It was already obligated before he was in Makdash. But the woman cannot go straight to Hekdash, who now already has taken over the whole estate, and collect her ksuba directly from Hekdash. And so the creditor cannot collect his debt directly from the Hekdash. Ella, rather, the one who redeems, meaning the original owner of the property, he has to redeem these debts from Hekdash with a very small amount of money, a dinar or something very small. Amanas leaked Lisha b'ksubasa with the intention to have to pay up his wife, her ksuba, and to his creditor that debt that he owes him. Why? Because like we said, most definitely, Hekdash did not take effect on those already monies that were indebted to them because it wasn't even his to be makdash. That was owed to the wife and to the creditor. Now, so why does he have to go ahead then and redeem with this small amount of money? That's because of a rabbinic decree, as the Gemara is going to explain. Now, continues the Mishnah. Let's say Hikdash Tisha Mana. Let's say he was Makdash 90 Mana. And actually, the debt that he owed to the creditor was actually even more than that. It was actually 100 Mana. So it says the Mishnah, Maisav Adinah. What the creditor does, he, so to speak, adds on another dinner that he's lending to the borrower, to the debtor that owes him money. And now the intention of that dinner is just to go ahead and do the redemption, which we said has a minimal obligation. But you add on the dinner, and then he redeems these assets. Again, which is this halacha with the intention of either whoever the collector is, either to give the woman her ksuba, or like the case we're describing, to give the creditor his debt, which is essentially the same halacha. The Gemara will explain exactly why we're picking this case when it's not the equal amount, but it's the same idea where the hektish is subsumed in the amount of the debt, so he's going to be able to collect that for his debt, and even though it's not exactly the same amount, he'll quote-unquote add on to the debt a little bit more, which is that a little amount that he has to redeem it for, because you can't just take it directly from Hekdash, even though it's actually not owned by Hekdash, as the Gemara will explain the reason of this halacha. As the Gemara says, why do we have to say in the Mishnah this idea of the one who redeems it has to redeem it? Why doesn't the woman and the creditor just go ahead and take it straight from what Hekdash has taken over with our redemption? Because actually Hekdash didn't take effect on that amount, because a person cannot sanctify something which isn't his. And it's not his because it's already owned, it's already owed to the creditor and to the woman. Says the Gemara, Mishum de Rebavo. You're right, but it's Gzeir de Rabban, because Rebavo, which you mentioned in the last parak in Avlam, Gimel and Aleph, Dom Rebavo, he says, Shalo Yirmi, that people shouldn't say, Hekdash Yitzhi B'lei Pidyon, that, oh, you see, Hekdash grew up without being redeemed. Now, the truth is, it wasn't really Hekdash, but it seems like that, and that's the perception. So because of that, we have to give a nominal amount just to go ahead and take away from that perception, as that might seem like Hekdash Yitzhi B'lei Pidyon. Now, additionally, the Gemara says, the Masnitin de Leikir B'Shem Gamliel, our Mishnah, which is from the latter half of the Mishnah, is not like B'Shem Gamliel. Why? Because the time we're in the Brayis, B'Shem Gamliel, he says, if the debt was the equivalent of how much this person was makdish, then paid. That's where the halacha of our Mishnah would apply, that then you redeem it with a nominal amount, as we said in the Mishnah. Yes, here is where you could say that when he originally lent him the money, it was with the intention of collecting from these assets, which he then subsequently was makdish. But that was already had the debt on it from the lender. But if not, if let's say the debt was more than these properties, which this person subsequently was makdish, then ain't a paida. Then actually you can't do this idea of, quote, this nominal redemption from Hekdash, because his intention when he lent the money was not on these assets, because it wasn't the equivalent of the money that he lent him anyway. Rather, it was based on trust. So therefore, you cannot collect it from Hekdash as if it's owned by him, because it's not. That wasn't your intention. And therefore, if you would want to get it from Hekdash, it's actually is Hekdash's, and you would have to do it according to its equivalent value, not with this nominal redemption. Actually, another interpretation, Rashi, is that when we're saying that if not, in the paida, means to say that actually you could actually take it without any redemption whatsoever. You wouldn't even have to do the nominal. But Rashi prefers the first interpretation, which means to say, according to Shem Gamliel, that not like the halacha of a Mishnah, which we see in the Mishnah, that no, even though it wasn't exact, even though it was less what was makdish, still, contra Rabbanon, his intention was on it, because as much as I can get, I can get. But Shem Gamliel holds, no, only if it's the equivalent or more than his intention was, and if not, it wasn't even on it, and therefore it's hekdishes, and it's not considered the debtors. But the Gemara clarifies, Rabbanan ad kama. Now, according to Rabbanan, until how much do they hold that, yeah, he would lend, let's say, $100, even to somebody that's $90, $80, until how little would you say his intention is on collecting it from that, and it is his, and not hektish? On that, Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, Rav Sheshe says, ad palga, up until half of the worth. Now, if it's less, if let's say he's lending him $100 and something worth $10, then there's, even according to Rabbanan, his intention is not on that item, and again, that wouldn't be, you could just do a nominal redemption as if it's really his. Not really his, it would be considered hektish, and you would have to then redeem it according to its actual value, and not like we're saying the halacha of our Mishnah, even according to Rabbanan, it's only when it's at least 50% worth its value or more. I think we're continuing with the next Mishnah, going back on the Mishnah we had learned in Chaf Aleph and Aleph, and clarifying it. Says the Mishnah, Afa Pishamru, even though we said over there in that Mishnah, the chiyuv erechin mimashkin and isai, that regarding a person who has an obligation of a nedar of erechin, we take collateral from him, meaning the treasurer of hektish goes into his house and forcibly takes assets from him to pay up the debt of the erechin. In spite of that, noisin le mazon shleishim yom, we give him, we're not going to take away everything from him, we give him sustenance for a 30-day period, and uksush ne masachedish, that he could have clothing for the next 12 months, mitu mitzas, that he has a bed and its bedspread, v'sandal v'tfilov, that he has shoes and he has his tefillin, meaning to say, and regarding all these different things, we leave him, even if he doesn't have them himself, we leave him enough money to be able to have and go buy these things, like tefillin and shoes and a bed and so on. But says the Mishnah, that's only loy, that's only for him, avaleila ishtay labana, but not to have these necessities for his wife and for his children. For that, we wouldn't leave him. Now, says the Mishnah, additionally, mahayu uman, if he was a professional craftsman, so nixnli shnei klei umnis, we leave him two of those tools, mikol minamin, from every type of tool that he has. Because there are certain crafts that you need to have four or five different types of vessels, utensils, we leave him each one of those tools, two of each type. Charish, a carpenter, nicely shnei, and the gear says me'atzdin, we leave him two planes, which is a type of a tool that a carpenter uses, v'shnei megiris, and two saws, which is a type of a knife with many different indentations, which cuts quickly, that we leave him that because that's part of his craft. Rabbi Yazim, he says, if he was a farmer, nicely tzmadei, we leave him his pair of oxen, which that's his kleumnus, it's his tools of his profession. A chamar, a donkey driver, nicely chamar, we leave him his donkey. Now, let's say hayulei min echad meruba or min echad muad. Let's say from one type of tool he had a lot, but from one type of tool he had a little bit. So, for example, let's say he has three planes, but only has one saw. Then ein oimer limkres meruba belikach min muad. You don't say, okay, so we're supposed to have two of each. You don't say sell from the one that he has a lot of to buy more to fulfill the amount of the little one. No, ela noisin leishnei minim in the meruba. Rather, you give him two of the one that he has a lot of. But the third one goes to the treasurer. And whatever he has from the one that he has a little bit of it, as much as he has, let's say he has one, so then he only has one. And you don't go out and buy him another one from the sale of the one that he has a lot of, because just like up until now, he was sustaining himself with just one. So to now, one's also going to be enough. Now, says the Mishnah, Makdish Nechasav, if someone is Makdish his estate, so his tefillin is included in his Nechasim, so Man Le Tefilov, so then we evaluate the value of his tefillin, and then he has to redeem it because that was also included in items that was Makdish, it's part of his estate, and it's included in that which he gave over to Hektish, and it's not considered his anymore, and therefore we have to evaluate and he has to redeem it back from Hektish.